You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Guess what? Andre Shakti is back this week. We have an amazing chat all about her new project, I Am Polly and So Can You. We answer listener questions, we geek out about her writing, we kind of like recap everything that happened at Erotic Film School, which was so fun. If you love this episode with Andre, you can also hear her first interview on the show back on episode 119. So be sure to check that out if you totally love this. But before I read her bio, I want to let you know that, of course, we all need to take a little bit better care of ourselves, and taking care of our mental health is no exception. I'm a big fan of self-care and taking care of us. I talk about it all the time on the show, and that's why today's sponsor, Talkspace, the online therapy company, actually makes it easy to connect with an experienced, licensed therapist that's handpicked just for you. I've used Talkspace in the past and had a wonderful experience getting online therapeutic support with a therapist that was sex positive and kink aware, and it was terrific. And the best part is it's as little as $32 a week. So using Talkspace, you can send your therapist text messages, audio, video messages, whenever you want, or you can even do a live video chat, which is pretty cool. And if you want to vent about work or family or just talk through something that's been on your mind, your therapist is there ready to help. Truly any time of day, any day of the week. If you want to sign up or learn more, all you have to do is go to Talkspace.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real. And it's super important that you use that link, Talkspace.com/SGR. That's a custom link just for listeners of this show that gets you a special offer. And you can use coupon code SGR to get $30 off your first month. And that helps to show support for the podcast. So of course, that's coupon code SGR at Talkspace.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real with Talkspace Therapy for How We Live Today. And if you want to support the show in other rad ways, you can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal because Dylan and I talked this week and we recorded an episode. We had so much fun. Dylan has had so many juicy things going on in her life. So a shorter version of our chat is going to be available in a couple of weeks for everyone who listens to the show. But Patreon supporters, even at a dollar level, you get access to the full chat of all the juiciness that Dylan's been getting into and us just being ourselves. So be sure, patreon.com/sexgetsreal, that you head over there and check it out. So let's talk about this week's episode. Andre Shakti, as I'm sure many of you know, is a journalist, an educator, a performer, activist, and a professional slut living in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's devoted to normalizing alternative desires, destigmatizing sex workers and their clients, and not taking herself too seriously. Andre wrestles mediocre white men into submission and writes about sex work, queerness, and non-monogamy for places like Cosmopolitan, Rewire, Thrillist, MEL, Vice, Autostraddle, and more. She can frequently be found marathoning Law & Order SVU under a chaotic pile of partners and pit bulls, and yes, she knows how problematic that show is. Andre is the reigning polyamory pundit at her non-monogamy advice column, I Am Poly and So Can You, which you can visit and submit questions to via iampoly.net. And we talk a whole bunch about polyamory and non-monogamy and her journey and her advice on this episode. So let's get started. Welcome back to Sex Gets Real, Andre. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be back.
Yeah, I know that we are going to have some really fun conversations about a bunch of listener questions, and I totally want to geek out about your new I Am Polly project, but yeah. First, it was so awesome to get to see you in person at Erotic Film School last month.
I know. That's one of the things that I love about this community is that it's so small sometimes that, like, I mean, what city do you even live in? I'm not even sure where you're based out of.
Well, I was in DC, but I've spent the past 5 months in Salt Lake.
Okay, got it. So yeah, even sex pros that I like, that are in Salt Lake City, like somehow we bridge all the miles and we get to come together and see each other. So, yeah, I think that's great. It was a really fun day. It was a really fun day.
I just have to tell you, like, everybody's been asking me, oh my God, how was it? The first thing, and I told this to the listeners too, like the week after I got back, is just like, I was so in awe of how patient you and James were with all of us noobs, like barely being able to work the camera and stuff and all the starts and stops. But you two were phenomenal and it was so awesome and so fun. And like, yeah, I'm just like, Andre is massive pro status for this because it was just so great and you were so awesome.
Aww. Well, also, I mean, to be honest with you, I know you all were super self-conscious about, being like novices and just kind of learning the ropes and like things were feeling kind of fumbly. But honestly, that is so true, unfortunately, for so many porn sets. Just in general, like it's so, the porn industry is like so rife with like incompetence, from like all areas, but like, from my experience as a performer, especially from like the production side sometimes. And so, it felt a lot better. Like we were prepared for you okay. guys to be, fumbling around, not knowing what you were doing. Like Madison fully prepared us for it. Which is much better than when you like come on a porn set expecting like a really like, refined like professional experience, and instead you get like fumbling and like craziness and disorganization. So we were totally prepared for everything, and it actually went a lot like smoother than we anticipated.
Yay! Oh my God, I'm so excited to hear that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it totally it made me hungry to do more work like that. So that was like a really awesome experience. And also I was kind of in love with the rooftop party across the way from us.
Oh my God.
And how you were like totes flashing them and then someone came over and you knew them.
Yep. That was, So for the listeners who are not privy to that experience, during the filming, we were on like the fourth or fifth floor of that building, and directly across the street from us was a rooftop, a big, very lively rooftop party in the middle of the day. And we had these big, broad glass windows that, you could see right into our studio. So at some point we realized this party going on and we throw the curtains back and I'm, completely naked with like a strap-on dildo on, and James is completely naked, and we just start dancing in front of the windows trying to get them to notice us. And then they all start noticing us. So then they all come over to the edge of the roof and they're all like screaming and like dancing. And then like one of the people in the class flashed them, and then one of the rooftop girls flashed us, and then we started resuming filming, and this guy comes up the stairs of our building and just walks into the studio and is like, oh, hey, like, we saw you guys over there. Do you want to come to our party? Like, what are you guys doing? And it turns out that it was this very nice gentleman named Jolly, who I used to work at InfoSec when I first moved to San Francisco. And, I know him from the security community. So I'm like, I've only ever seen this man at like DEF CON conferences in Las Vegas when I'm in like full, like, professional, like business attire. And he literally just walks into a room like where I'm just wearing a cock and nothing else. And we totally like made it work. We totally like hugged it out and like said hi.
Yes.
But yeah, again, small world, right? Everything is very small.
Yeah. It was an awesome day and an awesome experience. And that was just like such a fantastic kind of like end to it all, was the little rooftop party exchange.
I know. If I had more energy afterwards, I was actually going to go over there and get some free food. But we were so wiped afterwards, we just ended up like going home and crashing. So next time.
Exactly. So I know that you have been talking lately about your super rad I Am Poly project, which is at iampoly.net. And mm-hmm. the little tagline is, I am poly and so can you. And you've been writing advice columns all about non-monogamy and polyamory and answering questions. And I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about like how that got started and why it's something you're so excited about.
Totally. So yeah, last year I guess I started really getting into writing. I've been writing my whole life ever since I was a kid, and I never really knew where it was going to go, like if it was going to go anywhere. I mostly used it as a way of like narrating my own experiences so I didn't forget them, because like my greatest fear in the whole world is like forgetting all of the like amazing stories that I have to tell about things in my life so far. And so I started kind of like documenting memoir style my life a long time ago. And I got really into journalism about two and a half years ago. I needed like an extra income stream. And, you know, I've been in the sex industry for a decade at this point. And some of my friends kind of, you know, shouldered me, and they were like, hey, you know, the sex industry and like kink, like those things are really like hot topics right now in media. You should pitch a bunch of stories to some publications. So I started writing for Cosmopolitan and Vice and this magazine called Mel, which is like a really intentional, ethical like men's magazine. And like Auto Straddle and Rewire and a bunch of other online publications. And January of last year, 2016, I was onboarded to a feminist magazine called Harlot. And Harlot was amazing. Unfortunately, it was a startup before anything else. And like so many startups in the Bay Area, it eventually folded about 10 months in. But one of the most popular aspects of the website was this column that my editor, Jetta Ray, and myself came up with. And it was, I am poly and so can you. And we ran it twice a month. So it was bi-monthly. And I would answer two questions, very similar format to what the website is now. And it brought in like the highest analytics on the site. It was wildly popular. After the first week, we never had to like make up any questions, because like a kind of like not so secret about like the advice column business is that like, especially in the beginning, you're making up most of your questions to like get it generated and get like, you know, the eyes on the column and people interested. And we never really had to do that. And that was kind of a beautiful thing. I've been answering my friends, my neighbors, my old elementary school teachers, my family's sexuality and relationship questions for as long as I can remember. And it's just been such a huge part of my life. And I feel like at this point, I've like solidified myself kind of informally in my like webs of networks as this like person people can come to for information. And I love that. And I love being that person, but that doesn't pay the bills. You know, like, so I needed to monetize it. And, I ran Poly, I Am Poly, So Can You through Harlot for about 10 months. The magazine folded in July, 2016. And, I tried to find another home for it. I shopped it around to all of my publications that I was writing articles for. No one wanted it. Either because they didn't feel like it would fit with the publication, or it was too like unusual, they didn't want to take it on, or they already had like an advice column or two running on the site. But I mean, the main reasons that I wanted to do it, so I took a few months off because I didn't really know if I wanted to generate it myself, if I wanted to like put all that work in. And while I took that time off and our country slowly like crumbled towards oblivion with the election cycle, I think we all needed a lot of advice this past fall. We all could have used a lot of advice. But I really thought about how important this resource would have been for me. And that's really what I've done with a lot of my work. I have a very much like a doctor heal thyself approach to a lot of the work that I do. And I basically just try and be like the person that I wish existed for me, that I had exposure to or access to when I was like growing up and coming into my own and trying to figure out my sexual identity, like what relationship structures worked for me. And I would have killed for a resource, an accessible resource, just telling me that I wasn't broken, because I've known I was non-monogamous since I was like 15. And I just cheated on all my partners like throughout high school, and I was miserable because I thought that I was broken. I thought that I was, you know, never gonna find a partner and that no one would ever want to date me. And if I ever wanted to have like a successful relationship, it was gonna have to be one of infidelity, because I'd always have to be cheating on my partner at the same time for me to really feel satisfied and fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And it took me until I was about 20, 21 for somebody to even introduce me to the idea of non-monogamy. And then I was just like hungry for everything I could get my hands on. And so with the advice column, you know, when I took that little break, I still kept getting questions. I was still getting questions, you know, on social media. I was getting questions to like the Harlot email. And after a while, I just said, screw it. Like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna like push my passion project out. So, it took me a while because, you know, the election, we were all in mourning for a long time. So about a month and a half ago, I launched iampoly.net, and that is the official home of the I Am Poly So Can You advice column. And every Wednesday, including today, I push out two new questions that people send in to me. All of them are authentic. I don't make any of them up. I answer them intersectionally. I also try and pick questions intersectionally. So I'm not always answering, you know, like straight white cis guys asking like how they can get like these two ladies in the same bedroom with them. I'm not all, you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to like, I don't want it to just be the same rhetoric serving the same demographics, because I feel like a lot of conversation and community around non-monogamy is already really whitewashed. And yeah. So not only did I want to make this super accessible, like financially, I mean, it's free. You can, you know, it's the internet. You can go on every Wednesday, no matter where you are. But I also wanted to make it accessible from a kink perspective, from a gender identity and sexual orientation perspective, from a sex work informed perspective, from a trauma informed perspective. And I may not hit all the nails on the head every time, but that's my intention. So, because I am seeking to monetize it, and because it is a huge labor of love for me, I do have an accompanying Patreon, which is patreon.com/iampoly. And that's how I get financial support for not only the column itself, but also for a lot of the sex worker rights activism that I do nationally, and the other articles that I write, because unfortunately, as you may or may not know, journalists are paid just about as well as teachers in this country. So, I think that's the spiel. I talk a lot. I'm sorry. I'm Italian. This is a problem.
No, it's awesome. Okay. Yeah. So I have, you know, over the years encountered a number of poly communities and poly ideals that I really struggled with, you know, the poly's more evolved than monogamy folks, and just kind of seeing these like exclusionary type approaches. And one of the things that I loved when I was reading through all of your answers is how like, I don't know, sweet and honest and vulnerable you are in the answers, tying it to like mistakes you've made or times you've been hurt, and also kind of offering this like hopeful kind of aspect of like, it might be hard and you might be hurt, but like there's a way through, and here's some things that I suggest. And I just feel so much kindness, and there's this level of like approachability, so that even if you're not poly and even if you're not non-monogamous, if you're just like exclusively monogamous, I feel like there's still a lot of advice that's coming through in your column that would just be so relevant to people who want to have open communication and strong connection and like resilience through mistakes and oops. And I really love reading it.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you. I really appreciate it. I remember I was working, I don't know if you know Marsha Baczynski at all. She's mm-hmm. another sex educator in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
She runs a really great program called the Good Girl Recovery. I think it's Good Girl Recovery Program or Good Girl Recovery Project.
Yeah.
Basically like destigmatizing and de-shaming, you know, the way women are socialized around their sexuality. And she actually is my personal relationship coach. So I have a relationship coach. The thing that I didn't want to do with the column is I really, despite the fact that I'm like in the adult industry and I'm this very like kind of vivacious, like outgoing personality, I really don't like being put on a pedestal because not to get all self-deprecating on Sex Gets Real, but I'm just as flawed as the next person, right? Like I make mistakes. I have, you know, tripped and fallen and had to get up and dust myself off, sometimes with the help of others, sometimes without. And I think it's really easy when, because there are no credentials to do anything that I do, right? Mm-hmm. Like I never had to, there's no master's program in how to be an advice columnist. There's no, you know, everything that I do, I didn't need a degree to get here. I have some degrees, but I didn't need a degree to get to whatever I'm doing now that I've monetized for my living. And I'm very aware of that. And I'm very aware that I'm only speaking from one person's experiences and one person's background, which is my own. So staying like humble and reminding myself that it's okay, that not only that it's okay that I fuck up, but that it's really important because of the public stance in a very niche community that I do have because of that privilege. It's really important for me to own when I've made mistakes, both for accountability's sake when it's relevant, and then also so that it's humanizing. Like people who are reading the column are like, oh, like she's made that mistake too. Like that's happened to her too. She's fumbled in this way too. You know, someone has affected her in that way too. And that I think only in the beginning, when I first started doing the advice column, I was really hesitant to present myself as flawed because I thought that would detract from people, you know, seeing me as a resource on this. But then Marsha actually was the person who told me, like, no, it's actually twice as important for you to err when things don't go well, because that's how you humanize yourself and that's how you connect with your audience. And that's how your audience is reminded that, you know, vulnerability and mistakes are okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's like the kind of the vibe that I want to like permeate all of my writing really, but especially when I'm advising someone on something, because I'm not a god. I'm very much a very boring, like somewhat curmudgeon-y human. Whether or not people want to believe that is up to them. But yeah, I'm just one other face.
Well, we'll just say you're a god in your dog's eyes, and that's all that matters.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. Oh, speaking of which, I'm going to apologize ahead of time because I do have two very large, goofy, like dolt-headed pit bulls, and they are currently outside barking their full heads off. And if they run by the window, we might hear them. So I apologize. I'm not getting attacked by dogs. It's just background noise. So sorry about that.
Oh my god. Well, I hope we hear them because that would be delightful.
They are pretty great.
Yeah, they're so cute. Okay, so I'm wondering, like, for you, as you are in this space and creating this whole new resource and sharing yourself in this really beautiful way, like, what are your favorite aspects of relationships to kind of give advice on or to roll around in that, like, when you get a question in that realm, you're like, oh my god, I can't wait to answer this?
Oh, it's so funny. When you said that, I thought of like the opposite. Like I thought of like the thing that like when I get questions that I'm like, oh God, like again, I have to answer this.
I am so relieved.
I don't know why my brain just went there. But it isn't even a bad thing for the record. It's just those questions that I get where, and I'm sure every advice columnist, especially around relationships, gets this. But every question that you ever get where you literally could just write, talk to each other, and that's like the best advice you could give them. It's just, yep. It's so hard sometimes to not be or come across as repetitive. And so I try to like vary the questions and present them in a way that doesn't come off as repetitive. But a lot of times the answer really is as simple as communication. And sometimes I feel like I'm like a broken record because I'm just like, ha! Like, Like, whatever it is, whatever crazy situation is, just tell your partner about it. Like, that's all you have to do. But then I have to, like, come up with, like, three paragraphs of, like, answer that sounds like something, like, flowery just to, like, communicate the sentiment that they need to just open their mouth and, like, have what they told me come out to their people. So that's frustrating for me. The best questions for me... I mean, whenever I get a question that I've never heard before, that gets me really excited. And anything that involves, I've been doing a lot of writing and speaking and internal processing around, feminine, the idea of like the scarcity complex, in relationships, particularly around the idea that men are a scarce resource and that women, you know, whatever your definition of woman is, are constantly seeing each other as competition for this supposedly scarce resource that we're all clawing at each other to get, and how that fuels, you know, feelings of like jealousy and hostility and insecurity and competitiveness, and how that gets in the way of a lot of love and care and opportunity. And so I really love speaking to that and holding dialogues around that. And also, interrelational, I don't know, happenings, or issues between, metamors. So between, partners of partners. So like person A has two partners, B and C, and like, they're not getting along, and, how to kind of bridge that, communication gap and be able to sit down and relate to one another and have a dialogue with one another, because that's something that I've always had a lot of ease with my partner's partners. I have a very like overlap family style of poly. And I really love when I get to show people how they can actually, how they're actually primed to be really important folks in each other's lives, and how it would be like a missed opportunity if they weren't close, if they didn't bond. So that's like those are my favorite things to talk about, write about.
You know, it's really interesting when you brought up that scarcity kind of, worry, because there's actually something I've never shared on the podcast before. So I'm going to share it now with you. I know. And it's exactly around this of, I've noticed that some of my insecurity gets triggered and some of my fears get triggered because, like, I have never been in a relationship with someone of any gender, because I've been in lesbian relationships and trans relationships, and, you know, my husband's a cis man, who I've had to do so little emotional labor with, who contributes without my needing to ask, and who knows how to like support me in these really beautiful ways where I don't feel like I'm kind of secretly running all the household chores, or, you know, like when I'm feeling down, I don't feel like I have to kind of hide it. It's just kind of like this beautiful emotional discussion. And he's super open about like feelings. And I have this fear that comes up sometimes of like, if this doesn't work out, like it took me 38 years, right? I mean, I guess not really, because I didn't start dating until I was 16, but it took me like 22 years or 20 years to find someone who is this interested in social justice and racial justice and feminism and like fat and like overturning fat phobia, because I'm in a fat body, and who's trauma informed. And like, I kind of have this story that runs of like, it's rare to find people like this. And so like that kind of graspy feeling comes up for me sometimes of like, oh God, if I lose this, how long is it going to take? And so I love that you write about that.
It mostly presents with feminine identified folks, just again, because of the culture that we were all raised in, but, or I should say nationally, the culture that we were raised in. But it also, there's this thing that I haven't, there's a problem that I run into a lot, including with myself, where I find that when we're talking about jealousy, or feelings of intimidation or insecurity that are brought on by our partner being interested in someone else, 9 times out of 10, when people express their feelings about this to me, they make a point of noting, regardless of what gender identity or expression they are, they make a point of noting that one of the reasons they're so intimidated by this human is because they perceive them to be a lot like them. And there is this this thing where we already talked before we started recording about how I literally did not sleep last night. So listeners, please bear with me. I'm at a little bit more of a loss for words than I normally am. But there's this, we'll call it a phenomenon, of, folks generally getting, mostly triggered, for lack of a better word, by people that they can more easily compare themselves to. And I think it speaks to a greater, societal issue of, how, especially with social media and the internet, it makes it super easy for us to be constantly comparing ourselves to one another. Whether it's other people in our age demographic, whether it's other people in our industry, whether it's other people that look like us, maybe siblings, it makes it really easy. And because everyone is kind of trying to like put their first foot or best foot forward rather, and, post about their great vacations they're going on Facebook, and they're, oh, here's a picture of me with my amazing dogs, and here's a picture of me and my partner. It's personal while being impersonal at the same time, because it gives this false idea of what other people's lives look like, and it makes us really tear into ourselves. And I find that jealousy pops up for men, for women, for trans men, for trans women, oftentimes when they can really easily compare themselves to the person or people that their partner is interested in. So for me, when my partners, who are generally more masculine of center folks, are interested in other like queer, high femme sex workers, I will feel those twinges start, where if my masculine of center partner was interested in a trans man or a cisgender man or even a butch lesbian, it's much easier for me to welcome that person in, because I just don't naturally find myself comparing myself to them and then inevitably comparing myself to them in my mind and then finding myself lacking. So yeah. I think this is like a really crucial element of jealousy in general, but especially how it presents in non-monogamous relationships. And I wish I had like the remedy. I wish I had the thing that would make it all better. Maybe I just need time.
Yeah, well, it's just such an interesting problem that I think lots of us have for lots of different reasons. And so I love that you're going to have this space now to start like unpacking that as you answer other people's questions and think about it and explore it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I told you, it's very much a doctor heal thyself. It's like with every single question that I get, I am like dispensing wisdom on whoever is reading it, but also they are dispensing wisdom on me about situations and experiences that aren't mine, that I haven't had in some instances. And then a lot of times when I post, the columns to social media, they'll start dialogues happening in the comment section. And it all just adds to my knowledge. It all just adds to it. So, yeah, it's like being the teacher and like the student at the same time. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I love too about just the podcast and getting these listener questions is like, I learn so much from other people's lives and struggles and perspectives. So I love that. And speaking of listener questions, would you like to help field a few with me?
I would love to.
Okay, so let's start with one about threesomes, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. So it says, "Hi, Dawn. My boyfriend and I were a cis couple, and we just recently moved to Salt Lake City and started listening to your podcast. We were so excited to hear that you live in the area, but also so upset to hear that you're leaving. We have recently been exploring an open relationship, and your podcast has verbalized so well all of the things we've been experiencing and feeling as a newly open couple. We've been looking for a third female recently and are having trouble figuring out how to approach people to be a third. I am more reserved and quiet and have trouble putting myself out there, and my boyfriend is more outgoing and friendly. I've also recently started exploring my sexuality with girls, and my sexuality at this time is more fluid.
We've noticed that it seems to work better for the girl to approach another girl for a threesome because it sometimes can come off as creepy for my boyfriend to ask girls, and he really doesn't want anyone to feel that way. Do you have any advice for both of us on how to approach a third? Thank you so much for making such an incredible podcast that talks so openly and honestly about sex. Thanks, Salt Lake lovers.
Yay!
Yay!
Threesomes! Woo! Threesomes! Okay, so I actually, this is how dorky I am. I'm sitting here taking like analog notes because I don't want to type and then have like the feedback come through. So I'm like scribbling furiously while you're reading these out because I have a memory like a sieve. Okay, cool. So I love unicorn questions so much. Yay. I really do. So my advice to them, so first of all, the woman who wrote in, she was definitely accurate in assuming that it would be a much safer feeling and more comfortable situation for her to approach other women versus, you know, putting her boyfriend out there, which is true. I mean, a lot of times there's a fear among unicorns that the woman in the relationship doesn't really want it, that the boyfriend or the husband is pushing for this to spice up the marriage, to maybe save the marriage or save the relationship. And so the more for a responsible, ethically minded unicorn, the more reassurance she can get from the an enthusiastic reassurance she can get from the woman in the situation, usually the much more comfortable that is. However, I would definitely be careful in how you do it. So the last couple that I talked to about this, they kept saying, yeah, we just go to bars, you know, we try and go out, we go to music venues, we go to bars, and, you know, we kind of like throw the girl out there and she starts like chatting people up, but it never really like works out. And I'm like, well, first of all, you don't want to make the woman the lure. Okay. Yeah. Like you don't want to, you know, like you don't want to like have this like very staged scenario where the man is like leaning up against the bar, like making direct eye contact with like the woman at all times. And she's just kind of like out in the middle of the dance floor, like this big shiny, like fishing lure. And then as soon as like another woman makes contact, he like reels both of them in. Like we want to like avoid any of that like predatory or like perceived predatory behavior. And I think one of the ways that you can do that and that you might have more success at it is number one, possibly looking a little closer to home. So possibly instead of looking for strangers, maybe sitting down as a couple and making a list of like friends, like female friends that you have, people that are in your social circles already, who either are single or maybe you know that they swing or they're open, and see if any of those people who you already have kind of vetted in a way, who are less likely to feel preyed upon, would be down for an adventure like that. So I would say first, like to kind of look at your own networks instead of assuming that it has to be someone you've never met before, you know, that you're going to be having this new experience with. And then if you can't find anyone there, I would honestly suggest, going out to queer spaces because a lot of times couples, heterosexual or heterosexual appearing couples will kind of stick to more mainstream venues to try and pick up thirds. That's not where the queer ladies are. Like generally speaking, that's not where you're going to find like a woman who's like down to like have sex with another woman and maybe like let her boyfriend or her husband like in on the action. So I would suggest the two of them like check out a few queer venues, a few queer events, queer bars in the area. Obviously not gay male bars or drag bars, but bars that women, that queer women and trans folks frequent, and go like a few times to kind of establish your presence there and get like comfortable and get a lay of the land just socially, like with no expectation of bringing anyone home. And then after you've kind of like gotten comfortable in that space, because also queer spaces can be It can be like a little jarring for straight people and vice versa. After you've kind of got your sea legs, then you can, you know, start striking up conversations with people. You can kind of put the woman out there. Maybe the, you know, guy goes like outside for a cigarette and gives like the woman like, you know, free rein. Maybe like they split the levels and he goes downstairs, she goes upstairs, and they just focus on introducing themselves to people and like making new connections. And that way the man isn't like, you know, obviously like sitting in the corner waiting for the woman to lure them back in. And people are less likely to get like creepy vibes. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing that I would say is that if despite all of your like tricks and all of my tricks and all of maybe Dawn's tricks, things are still not working out, I suggest hiring a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
I would 100% hire an escort because I will tell you right now, you have much more of a safe bet of having a good, solid, satisfying, fun experience, safe experience, structured experience with a sex worker than you will with just some random person that you pick up at a bar. Yeah. And that goes for sexual safety because sex workers, on average, are much more diligent about their sexual health and safety than lay people because it's literally their job. You don't have to worry about any messy aftermath if the person gets attached, if they, you know, want to like become like your third, if they're like really glomming onto one person in the couple or the other. That way it's a business transaction. You like wash your hands at the end of it and you're good to go. And you get to pick the person who's in your threesome. Like you can go online to advertising platforms and you can literally, it can be this fun date night where you and your partner sit down with some glasses of wine and like go scrolling for a unicorn, you know, on like an escort directory. So that is, I think, all of the potential unicorn wisdom that I mm-hmm. have up my sleeve. What about you, Dawn?
I love all of that. And I especially love giving yourself a chance to kind of just like get into some queer spaces and actually get to know people and kind of get to know the vibe, mm-hmm. because that's also, if nothing else, just a chance to like make some community, mm-hmm. so that even if it doesn't turn into threesomes, you still have people that you can like talk to about the trials and errors of what you're going through who would potentially understand what's going on. And I do know like there are queer groups here in Salt Lake City. And I also know that the Weekly Paper just did a feature about a month ago about several poly meetups.
Mm, cool.
They may not be interested in, you know, poly relationships, but even just kind of meeting people that are running in non-monogamous spaces, they may know of like secret swinger groups or play parties that are happening, since this is a little bit more of a conservative town.
Mm-hmm.
Also like checking out FetLife and seeing if there's any like things going on there. And I love your recommendation of hiring a sex worker. I think like, especially for people who are brand new to this, having a professional be the one that comes in and gives them a chance to kind of try things out and see if it really does feel good for them to have this exchange with another person and to kind of like make some mistakes with somebody who's a professional so that by the time they actually do meet that wonderful, majestical unicorn, they've kind of figured a couple of things out about like the way they need to communicate and what kind of felt icky and what felt really great. And so I think that is like such a fantastic recommendation. And I know like sex workers in Salt Lake City might be a little bit harder to come by than in some other larger cities, but you know, you're also only like 4.5 hours away from Las Vegas. And so like, there's definitely opportunities for just like getting out there and having some fun.
Oh yeah. And I will totally make myself available for this if anyone has like further questions on like, cool, I am really interested in hiring a sex worker. How do I do that? They can totally hit me up on social media. I'm sure we'll do the whole litany of places you can find me at the end of the podcast. But I'm totally down to help folks find the resources in their areas that they need for this because yeah, I mean, the more information I bestow on folks who are interested in hiring sex workers, the better experience the sex worker they hire has. And that's really all I want to do is make hoes happy and safe in the world. So
Perfect. Well, I hope that helps you, Salt Lake lovers, and I hope it gives you at least a jumping off point. Do just know that sometimes it takes a little while to kind of figure this out and to start seeing like who in your circles is even open to these conversations and meeting community, especially since you just moved to a new city. And don't forget, like, OkCupid allows for non-monogamous dating advertisements. And so that might be a way, if nothing else, just to meet a couple of people who are interested in the same thing, even if they're not people you necessarily want to hook up with. So just give it some time and have fun. And thank you so much for writing in.
Yay.
Yay. Okay. So I got this email from William and the subject line is "My wife feels I owe her one," and it's about some cheating. So are you up for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so here's what he says. "I've been married to my wife for 7 years and we have 3 kids together. For the first 2 years of our marriage, I had 4 one-night stands with random women. My wife never found out. All of the hookups were just for some fun sex and had no emotional ties. I don't know how to feel. If it's bad or good, I'm not sure. But if I say I wish I could take it back, I'd be lying. Some of my best memories have been random hookups because it's just so exciting and makes for a good story. I was going to take it to the grave until my ex-best friend threw me under the bus and blew it wide open. My wife left me and we were apart for about a year. Then we finally got back together, and long story short, about a year later, she tells me that she wishes she got a chance to cheat on me and hook up with a guy, and now holds it over my head that I owe her one. I absolutely do not want her to get with a guy. It would drive me off the chain. And I know everyone is thinking, well, you didn't think of that when you were messing around, did you? I've told her how I felt, and now I know I'm getting what I deserve, but I have this fear in the back of my head that she's going to cheat on me. I'd love your thoughts. Thanks."
Before we get to Andre's answer, I just want to remind you, today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company, as William probably should check out. So for as little as $32 a week, you can work with an experienced, licensed therapist handpicked just for you. On Talkspace, you can send text, audio, and video messages to your therapist and talk about your life, work through what's keeping you up at night, maybe even some infidelity and cheating situations, or just work on feeling a little bit happier. To sign up or to learn more, go to the special Sex Gets Real link, talkspace.com/SGR. And to show your support for the podcast, you can use coupon code SGR, which gets you $30 off your first month. So William, I hope that you're listening. And here we go with the advice.
Oh, man.
Right.
Okay. So I don't know that I have a lot of advice for this one, but I'll give you my little scribbled thoughts. So the first is that, Dawn, have you ever seen the show Shameless?
No.
Okay. So first of all, it's a phenomenal show. It's on Netflix, all 5 seasons, 6 seasons. It's with like Emmy Rossum and William H. Macy. It's really brilliant. Okay. It's like a dramedy. And this exact situation was a plot line in the last season. So there's like this couple, Kevin and V, and they're this great couple together. It isn't the exact situation, but V basically goes out to a nightclub. She's dancing with some strange guy and she accidentally has an orgasm by like grinding up on him. And she feels really guilty. And she's like, oh my God, was that cheating? Was it not? What does it mean? She goes back and tells her husband, Kevin. And he's like, well, like, I don't know how to feel about this. And she's like, well, you need to go fuck someone else to make this even because I feel super guilty about it. So actually it's like this situation in inverse, like in the exact inverse. She's like, you need to go fuck someone because I feel really guilty about this and I'm not going to feel like better about it or satisfied or like we're on even keeled again until you go and have an orgasm with another woman. And he's like, okay. And then it's like this whole like hilarious, like comedy of errors of him, like trying to like find some lady to have sex with once, even though he doesn't really want to do it, but because his wife wants them to be even. So that's like what this reminded me of. I'm sure it's completely unhelpful for this gentleman, but, my other thoughts are that, I'm a little, I feel like he's not being completely forthcoming about his motivations for hooking up initially when they were first married, because he says on one hand that the reason he does it, or he did it, was because it was exciting and, quote, makes for a good story. But then in like the same breath, he says, and I was planning on taking all of this to my grave until my best friend spilled the beans. So first of all, if your best friend knew, you weren't planning on taking it to the grave. Yeah. Like, so there's some conflicting, I don't know how much is like him convincing himself that he believes something that he doesn't. I don't know how much of him, maybe he just didn't want to paint himself in a super unfavorable light. But there's something more there. I mean, very rarely, unless you go through some like traumatic life event, do you have like a, you know, are you flush with like, you know, interest in infidelity and then never again, you know, like it's very, very rare. And if there, it seems like there wasn't any kind of correlating traumatic life event, around the time of these infidelities, I'm questioning his motives for it. And it makes me concerned for the sustainability of the relationship with his wife now that they're trying to work through things. And lastly, or maybe not lastly, but as a follow-up, dude, she's already cheating on you. like this whole, like, I can't help but think that she's already cheating on you. Like, if my fucking husband pulled that shit and I was in an otherwise, like, monogamously structured relationship and we went through all that, like, I'd absolutely go out and get mine on the side and then, like, you know, wash my hands of it. Like, if he thinks that, like, they are seriously working this out and getting back together and his wife hasn't either in the interim while they, like, weren't speaking for, I think, a year, and or in the aftermath of them reconnecting, was connecting with other people, then he's deluded himself. So at this point, in my opinion, whether or not he believes that he truly owes her one, she's getting it. Like, and it's just going to be, do you want to stick it out and stay with her, you know, while after she gets it? Or do you want to, you know, can you not handle it? And do you want to call it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, those are my initial thoughts. What about you?
Well, my very first thought when I got this email was get thee to therapy as fast as possible.
Oh yeah.
So if this is truly a relationship that you want to heal and grow in, then you need a third party to help facilitate some of these conversations, because there's clearly some really deep hurt and resentment going on. I think you're so right that his motivation for having these one night stands, I don't think he's confronted within himself. There's mm-hmm. just some big stuff going on there, because to me, if you really, really are committed to this marriage and you're doing this, there's something else going on that's really not working already. And just kind of like general relationship advice across the board, tit for tat scorekeeping is an incredibly unhealthy behavior.
Yeah.
And anytime you're like, well, I washed the dishes 5 times and you've only done it 3, so you owe me 2. That is actually resentment-based behavior that has been shown through research to be really, really detrimental to relationship health in the long term. So if there's kind of this, like, you owe me one situation going on, I mean, you two clearly aren't communicating very well, feelings aren't getting heard, resentment is there. And so I think just kind of like, the only place to really go at this point, I think, is to either decide you want out because it's not worth the work, or if you want to do the work, you need to get some professional assistance, because this just sounds like toxic from start to finish.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. That's a really good point, that the tit for tat, it hardly ever works. I mean, in my opinion, it's very similar to like the don't ask, don't tell setups for non-monogamous relationships. I have very rarely seen that kind of setup, that kind of thinking play out in a healthy way or sustainable way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think both of them have some pretty serious apologizing to do, but I think it has to start with him. It has to start with him genuinely apologizing multiple times over and over again for the hurt that he caused, for the betrayal, for the lies. He has a lot of work to do to rebuild that trust. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't like hearing this when something like this has happened, but it can take a significant amount of time to rebuild that trust. Like, for some people, years. And so he has to decide if he's willing to put in that labor.
Totally. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I actually have a book that I would recommend. Again, if both of them are serious about rebuilding that trust and reconnecting and rebuilding some kind of relationship, even if it doesn't end up being the marriage they had before, there is a book called I Love You, But I Don't Trust You.
Mm.
The Complete Guide to Restoring Trust in Your Relationship. It's by, I'm going to slaughter her last name, but it's by Mira Kirschenbaum. And I got mine on Amazon, and it's wonderful. It is written, you know, it's applicable for this couple that we're speaking about. It is written in a very like heteronormative, way, but, it's really wonderful. It's about assessing whether or not the relationship is whether you want to build trust. Is like an assessment process about whether you really want to build this trust or whether you're doing it out of like a feeling of obligation, either to yourself, to society, to the other partner, etc. And then it takes you through another assessment process of how to build trust, and then it's kind of like a choose your own adventure novel, and then it gives you the tools towards the end, and it was really valuable for me, so I'd recommend it. It's again, it's called I Love You But I Don't Trust You: The Complete Guide to Restoring Trust in Your Relationship.
Awesome. Well, I will link to that for this episode on sexgetsreal.com for anybody who's interested.
Yay!
Okay, so I have one more question that I think we have time for.
Yeah, let's do it.
And this one actually just came in yesterday, and I knew that we were going to be talking, and so I was like, ah, divine timing by this person, because it's all about non-monogamy and sex in multiple relationships.
Yes, give it to me.
Yeah. Okay, so R writes, hello, Dawn. First, like everyone else who emails, your podcast has inspired me and taught a lot. I listen to it before and after work to get caught up, and I mainly focus on talks about feminism, sex, and non-monogamy. Now on to my issue. I'm a 26-year-old cis male, but I identify as queer, pansexual, David Bowie-esque. I'm a big extrovert, and I love going out and meeting new people. I'm married, going on 5 years later this year, and I have a live-in girlfriend. The wife and girlfriend are very good, borderline best friends, and it's fantastic. The wife has occasional friends with benefits, but is virtually asexual. This is a development that happened over time. We are still incredibly intimate and passionate with each other, and she's very into rope and I'm not, so she's free to explore that as she wants. My girlfriend and I started out very sexual and incredibly passionate. The NRE was so strong. We fell in love, and I am her longest relationship of over a year. I've helped both of them through so much in life, and we are so comfortable, and this way of life could go on for a very long time. Everything that we share is amazing, and I consider them both life partners. However, the actual intercourse between my girlfriend and I has started to go away. I've explained my concerns, and she reaffirms that it isn't me. She hasn't even been sexual with her other partners. And that's fine. She explained to me that mutual masturbation and sharing fantasies is sex to her. Both of my partners have encouraged me to seek other partners for sexual purposes, but I don't know if I can. They're telling me it seems like I have an inner slut in me, and I need to find someone with an equal sex drive. And it just feels wrong to me to find someone for a purely sexual relationship. I feel disgusted with myself whenever I think about it. To me, sex is a way to be open and feel vulnerable, and I don't want to share it with anyone I'm not close with. So my question is, how do I find someone that I can be really good, almost best friends with, that I can also be sexual with? Isn't that just another romantic relationship?
This person is probably going to hang out with all of us and our friends. Am I limiting myself by not engaging in a purely sexual act without a deeper connection? Thanks so much in advance, R.
Wow. All right, I'm scribbling furiously again. Hold on
yes.
one second. okay. Well, first of all, R, it sounds like this person already appreciates the kind of magnificent situation that they're in. But I would still like to call attention to it. They have a wife and a girlfriend, both of whom they're in committed partnerships with, both of whom are super solid relationships, you know, for the most part, both of whom get along fabulously with one another and are very, like, sex positive and encouraging of each other's, like, explorations and experimentations and desires. That's a really fabulous place to be in. Like, I would like to just acknowledge that, like, you're kind of in a poly utopia right now. And I would hasten the listener or the listener to just sit for a moment and just sit in the rays of gratitude, because it's really hard to kind of find either fall into or intentionally construct those kinds of mutually beneficial, like, little ecosystems, you know? So, so it sounds like they've got a lot going for them. I also really enjoy that, you know, while, our sexuality or sex drive seems to be, you know, more intense, than either of their partners, that neither of the partners are trying to shame them for it. R is not trying to make either partner feel guilty about not being interested in sex, either right now or just in general. There's no shaming happening in the relationships. There doesn't seem to be any resentment happening in the relationships. And I think that also is really beautiful and rare. And speaks a lot to their connection and communication strategies. And then for their actual question, so people will disagree with me on this, and that's totally fine because I don't need to be everybody's best friend. but there is no such thing as a relationship that is purely sexual, in my opinion. Like, you cannot, unless you are having that purely sexual experience with yourself, with a toy, or with a blow-up doll, if there is another individual or individuals involved, it's never going to be purely sexual. Even if you never date, even if there's no romance to the relationship, there is still a relationship. You're not just, like, pulling a giant, like, burlap sack over the person and then cutting a hole for their genitals and then, like, getting your jollies, you know? Like, there's communication going on there. There's a lot of mutual disclosure. There can be vulnerability. There can be, you know, a camaraderie that develops. So I'm actually curious why this person is so concerned about potentially integrating another human into, like, their little ecosystem when the two that they already have in there are such stellar examples of their ability to do that. So, you know, if they already have these two partners that are copacetic with one another to the point of, like, it sounds like they all kind of consider themselves family, and I can very much closely relate to that. It seems like they are encouraging this person to, you know, not only seek other partners, but to not, you know, to not hide it, to form relationships with other people, to include them in on what they already have going on, which sounds like is a really healthy situation. So again, it kind of sounds like a win-win to me. Although it also may be the case that this person just doesn't want to seek other people and is really just stuck in this space of wishing that one or both of their partners were more sexually available because they just don't feel naturally driven at this time to pursue people for any reason, like sexual or otherwise, which, I mean, poly burnout and being like poly saturated are two very common things. And actually, this is very similar to a situation that I'm in. My partner, and they totally will not mind me talking about this, so we're good. My partner, my partner Jack is a transgender man, and he's married to a cisgender man named Jeff. And the three of us are all extremely close in all the ways. However, because I'm a sex worker and I also unfortunately have chronic like gynecological issues, and because Jeff is a war veteran who came home with a spinal cord injury that leaves him dependent mostly on like erectile dysfunction drugs if he wants to express himself sexually in that way, the two of us aren't always available for sex. And in fact, sometimes Jack will go like a week or 2 weeks despite having two partners where he doesn't get laid. And we do all, you know, same thing that the listener was saying, like we encourage mutual masturbation, we encourage like voyeurism, we encourage, you know, like watching porn together or like, you know, all these like other creative erotic avenues. And we've also encouraged him to find another sex buddy. Mm-hmm. And he still describes himself, despite being in this like unambiguously poly relationship, he still describes himself as being very monogamously minded. And he says the reason that he doesn't pursue other sexual or romantic connections is not because he doesn't think he could, or because, you know, they might not fill that void for him, but because he just doesn't want to. Like, he feels in all other ways completely satiated by the two relationships that he has. So if that is what's going on with the caller, then I really feel for them, but I don't know that I have any advice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you're talking about how there's like no purely sexual relationships. A couple of weeks ago, Jacqueline Friedman was on the show and she mentioned this researcher named Lisa Wade, who wrote a book all about hookup culture. And she has this quote of like, we have feelings about our breakfast. So of course we're going to have feelings about the people we have sex with. And like, that doesn't mean we are necessarily going to like fall in love or want a long-term relationship, but like we do have feelings when we engage with other people in this way with our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's like super important to just name. I'm also interested that this person is in this triad with these wonderful individuals and yet they say, I feel disgusted with myself whenever I think about just having a purely sexual relationship outside of this. And so it makes me curious, kind of like, what does sex mean to you? I thought it was really interesting that they specifically said the girlfriend feels that mutual masturbation and sharing fantasies equals sex, because that makes me feel like R doesn't think that those things count as sex. And so I'm kind of wondering, like, what does sex mean? And what is it that sex provides to you? Is it pleasure? Is it a release? Is it connection? Is it multiple different versions of those things, depending on the day? I think like when you kind of understand what needs sex meets for you, that makes it easier to also kind of articulate the types of relationships or the types of activities that might be really interesting. And I love how you're talking about with your relationships, Andre, like encouraging mutual masturbation and encouraging voyeurism, because I'm wondering like, what are other ways that R could explore pleasurable activities with their current partners that maybe isn't intercourse and fucking, but maybe still feels really good and engaged and kind of scratches that itch a little bit. Part of me wonders if a lot of this strife and this concern is coming up just because there's this feeling of like, I should be seeking sex from other people. Whereas like, there's something really beautiful happening here. And so if both of the other partners in this situation are encouraging R to kind of try these other things out, it sounds to me like the relationship is resilient enough
that if R did go out and kind of try a fuck buddy situation or a friends with benefits situation, and it felt terrible or it didn't work, that the three of them would have the resilience to actually heal from that and talk about it and find a new way to move forward. Mm-hmm. You know? And so I think that, like, I think the bottom line is just R needs to kind of articulate, like, what does sex mean for me? And what are all the ways that I can kind of experience pleasure and connection? And if sex really is something you want to explore outside of this current triad, then just know it sounds like that you've built something so beautiful and so strong that even if there are some mistakes or some hiccups or some regrets, that the three of you can really come together and support each other around that. And like, sometimes you don't know until you try.
Yeah, sometimes it can be really difficult. And I know this as a sex worker. I know R did not disclose they do sex work of any kind. But I know as a sex worker, I go through these roller coaster type periods where I'm actually not that slutty in my personal life. Most of my like sluttiness gets encouraged and comes out in my work. And so sometimes I'll go through a really like high, a very intense work week where I'm, there's a lot of sexual output, for a while. And then, you know, the next week maybe I didn't get that much work. There's hardly anything. And it can be really difficult. This has happened in personal relationships too, where like you go through that, new relationship energy period. You're like fucking all the time. And then at some point, like kind of before you and your partner know it, you've passed through that and now things are a little more stable and you're not having sex as often. And sometimes we can, when we go from periods of like high sexual activity to low or no sexual activity, not only can we feel, you know, like lonely and sad because we genuinely want that connection with someone else, but we can also feel like this weird, like kind of like societal pressure almost, or like this imaginary pressure to like keep it up, to like mm-hmm. keep up the momentum of, and like, I mean, for me, I know that, early on in my poly days, when my partners would go out with other people, something that would be really helpful for me would be if I would make dates with people of my own that corresponded at the same time as my partner's dates. And that way I wasn't sitting at home twiddling my thumbs, you know, feeling all like FOMO-ish. I realized recently in the past year that that doesn't work for me anymore, because I realized when I started kind of using those same tactics that I used to utilize in my early 20s, that I actually, like, while I was out with these people, you know, no matter how charming or smart or hot or sexually attracted to them that I saw that I could be, I realized it wasn't actually what I wanted. Like, I didn't actually want to be out fucking other people. Like, I actually probably could have benefited from staying home, you know, or maybe taking myself out to see a movie or getting some work done. And I don't know if that's just like the number of years I've been doing poly. I don't know if that's me getting older. I don't know if that's just like another shift that's happening for me right now, but I've had to remind myself multiple times recently that no one is judging me for not having sex. Like there is no one in the world is peering through my, you know, bedroom blinders with binoculars, to my knowledge, though if they are, I should probably start charging them. And judging me or saying that I'm any like less of a, like whatever, of a poly person, of an LGBT person, of a sex worker, because I'm not like fucking or getting fucked like constantly all the time, 24/7. Yeah. And that's okay. Like that is so okay. So if this person does like that internal searching about what sex means to them and what would really make them happy right now, what kinds of connections, and they come up with like, actually, I really don't want to be connecting again with anyone right now, or I don't want to be connecting with anyone who's not my partners, who aren't my partners right now. That's okay. Like, that's okay. And you might have to say that to your partners. You might have to do that soul searching and turn around and be like, hey, listen, you folks are wonderful. I love that you're so encouraging of me. You're so enthusiastic that I seek, you know, outside connections, that I explore different things with people. But I'm just really not feeling it right now. So like when I am, like, I will totally tell you, and then you guys can be my cheerleaders again. You know, you can totally start cheerleading.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have an amazing life, an amazing support system. And I hope that whatever kind of discomfort you're experiencing around this, that you know that you've got this beautiful wife and this beautiful girlfriend who are supporting you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. I hope that some of the stuff that Andre and I offered gives you just a little bit of relief or some new perspective and a way to just kind of approach these problems and feelings from a new way. And I really appreciate it. So we are definitely at the hour, Andre, as happened last time, because we have so much fun just like geeking out.
I know.
I would love it if you could share with everyone how they can, I know you mentioned iampoly.net earlier in your Patreon, but if you could just remind everyone where you are all over the web, that would be great.
Totally. So you can find me pretty much that's not even remotely true. You can find me pretty much everywhere because I'm kind of an old lady when it comes to technology. So I haven't, I'm not on the Snapchats or the Instagrams or the Tumblrs. I am, however, on Twitter as at Andre Shakti. That's AndreShakti. You can also, again, visit my website at iampoly.net. You can visit my Patreon at patreon.com/iampoly. And I'm also on Facebook as Andre Shakti, although Facebook blocks me on average about 5 months out of every year. So if you send me a message or friend request me and I don't respond to you, I promise I'm not being a dick. I just can't get to you right now. But I'll be back in 30 days when they decide that I've served enough time for that photo of my butt in a pair of underwear that was, you know, causing so much concern.
It makes me so upset because I feel like I'll see these posts of you with your dogs and these cool events that you're doing, and then like it kind of disappears, and then like all of a sudden it's like banned again.
It's great. I actually have this whole network of people, and it's mostly my partners and then like people in the porn industry, and there are like set people. Like I have like Gisley, Kitty Stryker, and then like all of my partners who are like responsible for telling the internet that I'm blocked on Facebook. So like every few months I'll just send them all like I already have a pre-organized group text in my cell phone. And I'll send them all a text being like, hey y'all, like it happened again. And then they'll like diligently go online and like try and reroute as many people as possible. But they can't keep me down. God damn it. They can't keep me down.
Yeah. Fuck their stupid, like anti-everything policies.
For real. For real.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me today. I always have so much fun talking to you. I think you're fantastic and gorgeous and amazing, and I hope everyone goes and checks out your new project.
Oh, likewise, and good luck with the move. I'm really excited for you, and you might have a person crashing on your couch in the not too distant future.
You are welcome to do that. Well, to everybody who tuned in, be sure to check out all of Andre's amazing work. I will, of course, have links to everything that we mentioned today at sexgetsreal.com for this episode. You can also head there to ask your own questions and to share your own stories. I love hearing from you. Don't forget, you can also support the show at patreon.com/sexgetsreal. And while you're there, check out patreon.com/iampoly and throw a few bucks Andre's way. And I will talk to you next week.
Bye.